everyone, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, we spotlight in-depth interviews with legendary musicians and celebrities. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, 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 everyone. I'm Ray Shasho. Welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists, celebrities, and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Greg Valse showed great skills in singing from a very early age. Being a self-taught musician, when he was only 13 years old, he started his own band called the Wombats. As he grew up, he went on to share the stage with the likes of Janis Joplin, Chicago, and others. 1970, he became a born-again Christian and started performing with several Christian bands. He formed a band called Gideon's Bible and later toured with a group known simply as E-Band, which was a part of the Jesus Movement. E's only studio recording can be found on the rock musical 2LP album, Because I Am, released in 1973. After E broke up in 75, Valse moved to Springfield, Missouri, where he worked with legendary guitarist Phil Keaggy. He also performed the lead role in a rock stage musical called Ezekiel. 1976, Valse received two of the most important calls of his life. First, he was offered the lead singing position of REO Speedwagon. Valse, being a recently converted Christian, declined. 6 weeks later, he got the call to participate in Petra's second album, Come and Join Us. Although at the time he participated as a guest singer in just three songs, founder guitarist Bob Hartman, who at the time was sharing the lead singing duties with co-founder guitarist Greg Huff, offered Valse the full-time position. His first full-time album with the band, Washes Whiter Than, came in 1979, and therein came one of the most prolific periods of the legendary band. Valse remained the lead singer until 1985 when he left to pursue a solo career. Valse released his first solo effort, titled The River Is Rising, in 1986 under Mer Records. He followed it with three other moderately successful albums. During this time, he also toured with Joe English and a band called Pieces of Eight. Valse tours drew in the 1,000 to 1,500 range during this time, a very respectable number for a contemporary Christian artist, but nowhere near the level he experienced at the end of his tenure with Petra. In October 4, 2005, he rejoined Petra for the live recording of their last DVD, Petra Farewell. He joined the stage with current singer John Schlitt for a melody of ballads, and he followed it with a solo rendition of Grave Robber, which was one of his hits with the band. In 2010, he spearheaded the renewal of the classic members of Petra from the early 80s. Classic Petra was born. Greg X. Valse, John Lowry, Louis Weaver, Mark Kelly, and Bob Hartman took the band on a two-year world tour with new recordings of the classic songs. In 2016, Greg, Louis, and John agreed to record another album of classic Petra songs and recruit the talent of former Petra member Roddy Cates, and former Pieces of Eight member Kirk Henderson. Greg Bailey, another former Petra member, was asked to play bass on the 2018-19 tour. This new project is called CPR. Please welcome singer, songwriter, musician, producer, Greg Valse to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Greg.
I don't know even what to say. I think almost, did I fall asleep during that whole deal? No.
Most people do.
Blah, blah, blah. What are you doing now? But we are doing something, and that's it's kind of like I saw Mick Jagger's picture on the front of Rolling Stone. He's 75, and I thought, I can do that.
I think so. Why not? Hey, we need you guys. We need you guys.
Well, you know, we're doing what we feel like we're called to do. course, the classic Petra thing that did last, you know, over a couple years, and we did go around the world. It was a whirlwind deal. It was very good, but it just didn't work out for that group of guys. And I want to be nice here, but Bob really didn't want to play with the band anymore. He had some physical issues, and I think his wife didn't want him on the road. And anyway, so we laid it down for about 6 years.
Right.
But the good part is that the calling on your life and what God has for you remains. So things strangely but very interestingly opened up. I was in Nashville actually working on Carmen's last record, singing a few songs on his record to help him. I had a little time, went over to John Lowry's studio in Franklin, and we were conversing, and I said, John, you know, Louie and I are going to do another record. He said, well, I want to do it with you. I said, you know, I know Bob doesn't want to do it, and we don't even know where Mark is, but anyway, so let's pray about this. So we did, and a couple months later, this friend of Louie's of 20 years, who actually was a broker, he had been a Nazarene pastor for 20 years, mm-hmm. and Louie was going through San Antonio, and he saw Dave, and Dave said, Louie, I think the Lord wants you guys to do another record, so here's a check for $10,000 to get you started. And Louie called me and said, you know, what do? I said, take the money. I called John Lyre and said, John, I've got $10,000. He said, let's get started. And so Louie had been talking with Ronnie Cates, and Ronnie was all in, really was. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's a good player and a good guy, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I said, well, as far as the guitar player, Greg, I got 12 guys here in Nashville that want to do this. I said, well, I'm sure that they do, but let's pray about this. So a few days later, I get an email that I never heard from this person, didn't know them, had no idea why they're emailing me. And I get many emails every day, but it's like this one caught my attention. And he said, dear Mr. Bowles, if you're thinking about putting the band back together, think Kirk Henderson on guitar. And that was it. And I thought, yeah, I know that. That's a sign for me. So I sent it to Kirk, and Kirk had been like a music pastor for 20-some years, and it just turned over his position and started a family counseling ministry in Louisiana. And he said, are you kidding me? I said, no. He said, oh, yeah, I want to do it. So Johnny says, oh, that's a great, he's got an R&B feel, you know, he's a good singer. And so we just took about 9 months to do the record, really, and because it was, well, another story part, another friend out of nowhere, he just says, well, how's it going, blah, blah, blah. Well, he said, well, I can put 10,000 in, bam, another 10,000. Well, that's enough for production costs for us. Nobody gets right. paid, but we get the record done. Mm-hmm. And then we're just about at the end of it, and John is talking to me, and he says, Greg, he said, I got 5 songs. If I could just have a string section. And I said, well, how much will that cost? And he said, well, you know, the A strings in Nashville are about $3,500 for 4 hours. I said, I'll find the money. And I'm just spitballing. Mm-hmm. So 2 days later, I get a phone call from an apostolic ministry that's actually – one of my coverings, if I can say that correctly. They pray for me all the time. But anyway, I've known this guy over 20 years. And he said, you know, Greg, Dennis, listen, you remember Tim? Yeah. Well, we were talking about how's it going with the band. I said, you know, well, I said, well, Tim just got an inheritance. He wants to know if he can do anything for the band. I said, ask him if he can write a check for $5,000. He said, I'll have it in the mail tomorrow morning. So the record is totally done. I mean, it's all paid for, we have no debt, and then it's like, okay, so what do we do? Well, let's pray. What a concept, huh? I don't mean this. I don't want to be the manager, the booking agent, the travel agent, but I ended up with the job. So I'm basically handling what we do. We've been doing dates. The band plays really good. I have 4 really strong singers. We do not play to click or stems. We just go out and do it like the old guys. And as a result, we can go places, we can change stuff, we can do what we want. And it creates a spontaneous atmosphere. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we do, but we don't. And so anyway, we're on it again. And I will say that Ronnie Cates, because of his schedule, just sent a lovely, you know, apology letter and said, guys, I can't, my schedule is not going to work for this. So, you know, and then Greg Bailey, who played on the record, was the cellist on the record. John tells me, well, Greg, you know, I work with Greg Bailey all the time. I think he's the guy. I said, call him. Next day, Greg says, I'm in. As many dates as you want to do, I'm in. So we have four Petra members, or Petra. We have four former Petra members, but, you know, it's like a congressman. Once a member, always a member.
Right, right.
And Kirk is so easy to work with. I'm not sure if sometimes, like, hey, dude, he's a Mississippi boy. Anyhow, it's going well. So that's the rundown of where we are today. But how we got there was, for me, I don't mean I'm old, but, you know, I started this thing 55 years ago.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And my voice still works well.
Your voice is awesome.
I can still hit the high notes. And
your voice is awesome.
Thank you so much. Anyhow.
And we're talking, of course, about the your latest release, which is, gosh, I just lost it for a second there, Back to the Rock 2, right?
These are all
songs that you recreated again with the new band, right, with CPR?
We did.
Yep.
There are nine of the classic Petra songs, which, by the way, CPR actually stands for Classic Petra Revival. We're reviving the classic Petra music.
Thank you for clearing that up.
And some people say, some people think it stands for cell phone repair. However, we have a number of names we could call it, but that's what it stands for. Now, there's one song on this new release that I felt was very appropriate. It's one that I had recorded 30-some years before. It's an Aerosmith song, and
Dream
the name
on.
Of it is Dream On.
Yep.
And, you know, I've gotten mostly positive response from it. I get a few negatives. Why would you do that song? Well, here's the story. The reason we're doing what we're doing is because we feel we have a mandate to reach prodigals.
Mm-hmm.
And prodigals are people that have been something once and are not anymore, and they're lost, and they're living in caves running from mad kings. I mean,
right.
You know, and so anyway, even in 2010, when it first started, that whole band came back together again, as I call a miracle of coincidences that were not coincidences.
Right.
That caused us to be able to go, and I felt like that the Lord spoke to me very clearly, and I hope it's okay to talk like this, but this is who I am.
Sure.
The Lord spoke to me clearly that there were millions of prodigals out there that could be reached by this music, but they'd been lost through the cracks. They had just slipped through the cracks. And it never was fulfilled. That call was never fulfilled. So, and we saw, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds respond to us and to the music during that time. And again, the same thing is happening, and I think that even more so now than then. Case in point, we're doing a pickup date in south of Columbus on our way to a festival, the jazz festival up in New Hampshire in 2012. And it was a 2-week notice. There was a church that said, sure, come on. We had about 1,000 people there. It was a really good turnout for 2 weeks. And at the end of the concert, this young man came up. I say young. This gentleman came up, and he said, my name is so-and-so. He said, I have to tell you, I have two brothers that I have not talked to in 20 years because we are estranged. And all three of us ended up coming to this concert not knowing the other one was coming. Because we grew up on this music,
right?
And your message and your challenge to us tonight has reconciled our family. And I thought, I don't think it gets any bigger than that, in my opinion.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
So, you know, they didn't know. They show up to music because, music is timeless in the the soul realm. It really is.
It is.
And so we're seeing, and this is a new thing, this CPR thing, even though we're doing the classic Petra stuff, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different feel. Of course, the guys play very well. And we're planning on another release of all original material next year.
Awesome. Awesome. Greg, I got to tell you what I think about the album, okay?
Okay.
First of all, I gave it 5 stars. I said it was an epic rock production with brilliant and compelling lyrical content, one of the very best Christian rock albums I've ever heard. And I really mean that. It's an awesome, awesome album. I liked every track on it. As far as favorites, they're all. I mean, I love the coloring song, of course. That's always been a favorite of mine. Your rendition of Dream On is fantastic. I think you nailed it. Did you get any feedback from Steven Tyler?
I haven't talked to him, but I could. I do know this. I know that the guys like Steve Perry and Lou Graham and those guys, Carrie Livgren, they all listen to what we do.
Oh, sure.
And some of those guys I have contact with.
Right.
But it's good to be an encourager. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the front end of this thing for a long time, and for whatever reason, I still have the energy and the desire to keep doing this. I did a show years ago. I was working with Pat Boone on a Celebrity Spectacular in Chattanooga,
really?
Tennessee. Back in, Pat's a real, he's a good bro.
Yep.
You know, we play golf. We converse. He loves the music.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so he did this thing to raise money for children's homes, about a dozen of them. There were a dozen homes that had parents with 6 kids in each one. They were in a community. They went to school. Every year he raised money. He'd do a 2-day golf tournament and then a big thing at the Civic. And he'd have, everybody in the world in. But he would bring me in for the kids. Like, he would have Clyde Foley coming. So I'm doing this. I'm doing a thing with Perry Como.
Really?
Yeah. So
you're going way back.
Back in the day, when I thought I was something, I used to go to Manhattan to buy my clothes down in Soho, and I would wear these really wild clothes. I mean, they were expensive, but I loved to wear wild clothes. And so I come out in this thing, this suit that's different, and I sing, and the kids are standing on the chairs, and the older people are just looking at them saying, "What are you doing?" I get done, and Perry Como comes out, and he's a comedian. He starts saying, "Man, I had this great suit that I bought in New York, and I was going to wear it. Somebody stole it out of my dressing room." And the whole crowd just cracked. And so he's 78 years old, and he sings like a bird. And I'm thinking, I can do that. So, you just don't know. Look at Tony Bennett. Come on.
He's still around.
Yeah, come on. So we're going to do what we do until we're done. And the reason, and when we'll know we're done because we're dead.
Everyone needs to get back to the rock too. I'm very sincere when I said it's one of the best albums I've heard in a long time. The lyrical content, Hollow Eyes, Children's Hunger, is basically the theme on that one. It was a favorite. The coloring song, it has a very Renaissance feel to it, like prog rock. Love that song. It's a great song. Not of This World, which is, what kind
that
of
that was a good one.
Yeah, we are foreigners that don't belong.
Really, yeah, that came out really good to me.
Oh, man.
I'm with you, Ray.
Incredible.
I liked all of them. I mean,
I love it.
Actually, when I don't listen to music that I sing, but there are times that we'll have somebody over for dinner, and musicians and people that I know, and they'll say, "Well, we want to hear this." So I will go into the studio room. It's a bedroom, but it's really a studio. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just burned the bacon. Can you believe that?
Burned the bacon. I like that.
I burned the bacon. I thought I could get away with it, put in the oven. But no.
That's funny.
No, you've got to burn the bacon. So
that's
this is
going
to have to go into baked beans, I guess. I'm a cook. I do all the cooking.
Are you really? Are you the cook in the family?
40 years.
Wow.
And it's just me and my wife now, but... And, of course, when the grandkids come, that's a different deal. But,
yep.
Yeah, sometimes you get distracted. You know, you get on a roll, next thing you know, you burn the bacon. Usually it's the rolls.
I know.
Usually it's the rolls.
Another track, Judas Kiss.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the guitar work on this album is also incredible. Judas Kiss, the opening, sounds a little bit like Jethro Tull in a way. It's another one of my favorites.
I have people over and they want to listen to it, I'm listening to them.
Right.
Guys, this is good. You know,
it's
and
a
you're
great
your
album.
Own worst critic. You're probably the same way. You're your own worst critic.
Yep.
But the response I've gotten from people, they say the same thing that you do. They think this is probably the best sounding.
Definitely.
And, content of a record, of a Petra record put together that they've ever heard.
I think so.
Well, I agree. So we're going to get out there and do it. We did get we have a record company, a Lamon Records. It's been, I don't know, they've been together 55 years. They're in Nashville. It's an independent label, but and they probably do mostly country, but we needed somebody to, I didn't want to do the licensing and the royalties and all that stuff. I can't do it. I mean, it's too much for me. So,
right. Yeah, it is too much.
They just said, hey, Dave Moody says, Greg, whatever you want to do, just tell me what you want to do. I'll work whatever kind of deal you want to do. I thought, really? I said, wow, that's refreshing. So they are distributing, and our website goes to their fulfillment department. People can get it at cprband.rocks. That is the website, cprband.rocks. And they say, well, why did you get that? Why did you use that name? Well, because CPR.com was $100,000.
Really? Holy crap.
And he said, I'm talking to my webmaster, you know, and this is just the way it goes. I said, Jim, so what do you got? He said, well, he said, I've got CPRband.rocks for $10. I said, grab it.
I'll take it.
So that's what we have. And it really fits the band, I think.
Yeah. It does.
You know, because that's what we do.
Yep.
Greg Bailey is going to be carrying an electronic cello with him. Well, it's an electric cello
with
him on the road.
Cool.
He's a really good celloist. I mean, but it just adds a whole other dimension. And we are getting ready to do another television special November 4th and 5th in Orlando, Florida.
Awesome.
So that's a good thing, too. We're playing, you know, we've got some dates coming up.
Yep.
A big date in Lakeland, the 21st. We're looking at
St.
Louis in October. We're looking in Kentucky in November. It's just weekends. And, you know, the guys are still kind of, you know, you're still busy. They got stuff going. It's like until, you know, if maybe a tour game together with another act as a double bill or something, we'll probably just continue to work weekends. And,
well, the show coming up in Florida, you know, that's only about an hour for me, you know, I'm south.
Well, you got to come.
Yeah, it's classic Petra with David and the Giants. I just talked to David Huff recently, and I've also talked to Keith Thibodeau. He was on the show. Yeah,
sure.
So it's coming up September 21st at Victory Church in Lakeland, Florida, and it's part of the Back to the Rock World Tour, which is going to be a great show.
Well, actually, it's a great facility too. They have really good sound and lighting, and of course they have to move it into the bigger venue they can.
Right.
But it all looks good. I talked to the promoter. He said that I'm getting response from Oklahoma, Kentucky, Tennessee, Louisiana, Georgia. He said they're coming from all over for this. I'm thinking, what? So obviously he's doing a good job.
I went to the site. I mean, they have a lot of different, shows, different kinds of shows. And like you said, I think they got a few different venues there, right? Different size
venues. Yeah, they do.
Venues.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show.
We're looking forward to that. That should be that should be a fun thing. And then we'll do the taping in November, mm-hmm. which is a brand new facility. It's TBN facility, but it's brand new, state of the art. The whole back wall is LED. I mean, it's going to be like a real deal. So
now, where's that?
Not that the last one was not bad. The last one was good too. But
is that the one in Orlando or?
The new one's in Orlando. The last one was in Tennessee,
in
Hendersonville.
Yeah. Actually, I took a tour in Orlando. I forgot what it was called, but they had Bibles dating back, I don't know how many years. It was an awesome tour. It was something land. I forgot the name of it. It was near Disney World.
So they have a whole theme park there, don't they?
It was a theme park, yeah. Religious Land or something like that. I forgot the name of Bible Land. It could have been Bible Land.
Bible
it was really cool. I mean, they had little shows, and it was a terrible day when we went. It was pouring down rain. But, to see these old Bibles handwritten from, thousands of years ago, it was just incredible. I don't know how they did it.
Well, they go over to Israel and they find stuff like that overseas. But I mean that's pretty big. So I'm really interested in. I haven't been there yet, so I haven't seen the facility. But from what I've been told, it is it's state of the art. They said, "Oh, we really want you to come here because it'll be a much better." And they'll use like 10 HD Blu-ray cameras. I mean, it'll be done right.
Wow.
And we'll do post on it. We'll do post-production. Yep. It'll be a good deal. But so we'll see where this is going to go, Ray. I'm really believing that we still have a few years left.
Oh, yeah. You got plenty of time left.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just keep doing it until we can't do it anymore.
Greg, you know what I find fascinating now? As rock stars get older, most of them are turning to God. And, back in the day, like in the 60s and 70s, they wouldn't even talk about religion. That was like out of the question. You know what I mean? They wouldn't let you know which way they're going. Now, I interview thousands of guys, and it's so cool that everyone opens up to me now. I mean, I talk to Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. We talk religion. We talk religion. We talk politics. He's very into the English, what is it, the Catholic Church for England or whatever.
Anglican.
Yeah. And he loves churches. He visits old churches all over the world. And
that's fun.
Yeah, he carries the Bible and he carries the Quran in his iPhone, he says. But for these guys to open up like that now, I talked to Lou Graham. We know about Lou.
Yep.
I've talked to so many guys now that are willing to open up about it. Do you remember Frank Marino from Mahogany Rush?
The name is, I don't know Frank, but I know the name, sure.
Frank Marino is a theology. He's into theology. I mean, he is so much into it. He knows everything. The guy is so intelligent.
Well, I've done a little study myself. I was ordained in 1975, so I've been an ordained minister for many, many years. But,
right.
Mine is music ministry. And I do,
right.
Actually, on just as a soloist, I am invited to local churches all over the country where I will
cool.
go in and do a Sunday morning, and I'll
really?
Actually bring a message along with music.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expecting sometimes to get this real guy come in and rock, and I come out and it's like, wow, I had no idea. And I said, well, that's why I'm here, so you'll have an idea. Everybody needs an idea. But
so many guys started in the choir, too. Ian Gillan from Deep Purple started out in the in a choir.
I did, too. And I was in, of course, when I started young. And the story is really not, it'll be in the book. And
mm-hmm.
the book will be out next year, hopefully. But
oh, great.
I'm not sure what I'm going to call it. Maybe E to Z or something. Just because really my life really took the transition in 1970 when I gave my heart to the Lord. And that group that was Gideon's Bible, mm-hmm. which was the secular group, all became E right at that time. And the whole group, all the band members, all committed their lives to Christ the same night. It's an incredible story. This man. Well, we met this. Our drummer met this little German lady at this somewhere or another, and she said, "Well, the Lord spoke to her and said, invite these boys to dinner." And we were all living in a 7-bedroom house. We had big pink experience. There were a dozen of us. Right. We lived in a 7-bedroom house, and our equipment was all set up in the living room. And every morning, whoever woke up first would go to their instrument and play 2001 Overture and wake the rest of the house up. And we were vegetarians, and we were studying Eastern philosophy under Paramahansa Yogananda. Wow. And, Sri Teshwar Babaji, Paramahansa. You know, Jesus, mm-hmm. of course, was one of the boys in that deal. But and then when we were invited to dinner, a friend of this little Elfrida was her name, a little German lady, spoke broken English. And this old man came in. He was about 55.
Old man.
I'm 20. And he walks in the room and he hangs up his coat. And we've had dinner. We were sitting on the floor all philosophizing about God and vegetables because they went together in that deal, in the Eastern philosophy thing.
Yep.
And we were all vegetarians at the time. And anyway, so he walks in and hangs up his coat and just shouts, "Praise the Lord!" And everybody, he sends this vibration through the room. I'd say that, if you were in the 60s at all, you understand vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another story. But he sent this vibration through the room and stopped the room. And then he began to prophesy to us. He began to operate in a word of knowledge, which is one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. He just got to tell everybody about their lives, where they've been, what they do, and was like, no condemnation. And he said, you want to know the way? And I said, yeah. He said, Jesus is the way. And he said, you want to know the truth? And we would say, Jesus is the truth, he said. He said, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man goes to the Father except by him. Well, that word penetrated my heart, and there went the guru. Door.
So, is this when you converted or before? Or
no,
after?
This is when I really converted.
This is
I
when
had
you converted.
How do I say this? I had a visitation when I was 7 years old.
Really?
And I was given a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it was. I mean, I wept. I felt this incredible presence. And then right after that, I could hear harmonies perfectly. And at 7, I was singing harmony with whoever could sing. Perfect harmony. Mm-hmm. I could hear it perfect. And so they would stand us up in front of for special deals. They would stand me and Richard Kaser up in front of this and make us sing Christmas carols. And I'd sing the third. I'd sing harmonies. And I didn't know what it was until I went to parochial school. And my second grade teacher, Sister Mary Evelyn, would play piano once a week, and we'd have a piano class. And we'd play and sing, and I would sing the harmony. And she would stop. Said, "Who's doing that?" "Well, I'm not talking. I've got flat knuckles already, from I'm not talking." So she starts again and then stops us. "Who is doing that?" And she didn't know. And I'm not talking. I'm not saying nothing. Finally, she sneaks to be sneaky. She said, "Gregory, come up here." So she has me stand by the piano. And she says, "We're going to sing this again, class." And she starts playing, and I'm singing this perfect third. She said, "Well, where did you learn that?" And I looked at her and I said, "Learn what?" I really didn't even know what I was doing. I just could hear it and do it.
Yeah.
And I believe that I got that gift at that visitation when I was
right.
there. And the rest, I started playing drums at 7, and then a ukulele at 9, and then a tenor guitar at 11, and then my first guitar at 12 and a half was a K guitar, cost $19. The strings were about an inch off of the fretboard. And my cousin and I, we were singing Roy Orbison, mm-hmm. I mean, all the early stuff, Everly Brothers, and then the Beatles hit in '64.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. we became the Beatles. But the Wombats was what we called our, and it was just three of us. We didn't have a drummer. We did have a drummer, two guitar players and a drummer. And then finally we found a friend when I was, I was 15 at the time, and a friend of ours, Tom Beiler, who was, went to Tom and we said, Tom, we want you to be our bass player. And he said, okay. So we went out and bought him a bass and an amp. He'd never played before. So that's the way it was. And he learned. In 2 weeks, he learned everything. And so then we signed our first recording contract in 65 with Golden Voice, where Dan Fogelberg, REO Speedwagon, Petra. I mean, it was the premier recording studio in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With Jerry Milam. I mean, Jerry built over 300 recording studios in the country. So, and the Wombats was the first band that he ever worked with in that studio. And if you go to goldenvoice.com or something, you'll see the Wombats picture, and we're on the front page, I think. But and we did commercials. We did salad dressing commercials. We did Silco Light commercials. We spent 40 hours a week in the studio during the summers because we're all
cool. Wow. And actually, if you go to www.wombats66.bandcamp.com, you have those Golden Voice recording from 66 through 67 by the Wombats.
You know,
and you can actually hear it.
That is fun. I have one, and boy, were we young. And we would play like state fairs and county fairs, and we'd get mobbed.
Wow.
I mean, it was fantastic. It was just like, what do you do? And we'd let our hair grow all summer long until it got over our ears.
And now, with the Wombats, is that when shared the stage with Janis Joplin and all these other guys?
No, that was Gideon. That was Gideon's Bible.
Oh, that was Gideon's Bible, really?
Okay. Yeah, that was Gideon's. And the one with Joplin, I walked into her dressing room before the show and to talk to her. You know, it was pretty open back then.
Yep.
And, God bless her, but she was slumped over a chair. There was a half a bottle of Southern Comfort that was missing.
Of course.
And she was not really coherent, and I'm trying to talk to her, and she's, what? And so I'm thinking, okay, this is one of my heroes. This is something wrong here.
Yeah.
So she comes out. We play. She comes out, and she does 22 minutes. And can't finish the show.
Really?
And 10,000 people tore the place apart. There were only four policemen in the whole Coliseum. And it was a riot.
Yeah.
I mean, and we were heading out the back door. And it was the next week we're opening for Chicago, which is these guys were amazing. You know, they were amazing.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. And then we did this festival at it was a small pop festival, you know, back in, I don't know if it was 1969 or 70, but it was Hayworth Pop Festival, and there were 80,000 people there. It was a small festival. And we shared the stage with people like B.B. King and, I think REO was there. A bunch of people were there, but it was out in the middle of nowhere, and it was hippie land. Which we were, so we fit right in.
Well, what happened the day that you were asked to be the lead singer of REO Speedwagon?
That's a very interesting question. I had moved to Springfield. I was the music leader of a small church.
Right.
You know, we call them pastors today, but I was just the song leader. I played bass for that group. But I'd moved there. I worked with my father-in-law was a writer. He had a number of books, and I ran one of his offices, and I did tape duplication and the shipping. We had a shipping people there, and I had built him a radio booth. I mean, I built him a really nice control room. But I worked with him for 8 years. But during that time, when I first got there, and this was 76, and maybe it was just the end of 75. I'm not sure which it was, but so I get a call at 1 o'clock in the morning, on a landline back then, and I'm thinking something's wrong, and I get up and answer the phone, And Terry Jameson, who was the owner of Golden Boy Studios at the time, and he said, "Greg, I'm here with the guys from REO Speedwagon. Kevin Cronin just walked out, and we need a singer. They want to know if you'll be the lead singer." So I got on the phone with them, and they said, "Listen, we know you're a Christian. We just want to know if you'll sing the material. You know, we're making $10,000 a night. You can have money, and you can be famous."
Right.
And I thought, what? That's what I thought. What?
That's a tough one.
And then I said, "Guys," and I made a split second decision. I said, "You know what? I'm really honored. I'm flattered, but I said I don't think I can do that. I don't think I can sing the material, knowing what I know."
Right.
And they said, "Well, okay." So 6 weeks later, I get a call from Petra, Dan Brock, the manager, in the studio, same studio 6 weeks later, at 1 o'clock in the morning, dancing. "Greg,
unbelievable.
You got to come and help us, man. This is not gonna work unless you come." And I heard a voice saying, "You can do this." And so I got on a plane at 7 o'clock the next morning. I flew up there. I sang for 15 hours. I did the backup vocals, all the backups on like 6 songs, and I did, you know, about 3 of the lead vocals. And I got back on a plane the next day, and I flew back to Missouri. I think I drank 12 Coca-Colas during that 15 hours. Don't tell anybody I do that. I don't drink Coca-Cola. Green tea, baby. Green tea, lemon, and a little grade B maple syrup. So,
you got an awesome voice. You have an awesome voice.
The guys would call me periodically and say, "Hey, we want to fly in for this show in Chicago. It's a big show. We're doing a show with Randy Matthews. We want to come in and, you know." So, okay. So I started really working with them on every date in 1976. And, you know, back then it was a weekend here, a weekend there.
Yep.
I mean, Bob, when in 1981 it was, this is an interesting part of this. It'll be in the book, of course. But in 81, the band had been, Petra had been a band and not a band, a band and not a band, a band and not a band. I think we went through a dozen drummers from 76 to 1980. A dozen. And I mean, at one time, I was the drummer. Oh, yeah. After 3 months, I was doing half the lead vocals from the drums. And I said, "God." And I am a drummer. I was a session drummer in Missouri. I did sessions for Coin Studio. And I said, "Guys, I can't do this." So, closing it. Then I'm the bass player for the band. And I get a keyboard player and another drummer to do dates because somebody offered something. And Bob says, "Oh, man, it's a great opportunity. You know, we can do this." We get together and rehearse for 2 days and then go out and do a weekend. And so I understand how the whole deal works, but I really am a singer. I mean, if I can be free to just go and pick on people, I don't mean that wrong, but, you know, go out there and mess with people, I'm much better off because then I get a vibration off the crowd and can, you know what to do.
You were born to be a front man. You're born to be a front man.
I was born to be a front man.
That's
so
right.
I worked with the guys really from 76 on, even though I never got the credit for it. I wasn't, quote, a part of the band until 79. But that's not really true. You know, I did every date with them from 1976 on. In 77, we did 20 dates in 30 days in Arizona in 4 square churches that we were booked at. We were supposed to, this is 6 guys traveling a box van, you know. And we did, and we get there, and in every single one of those dates, before the concert, the pastor came up and handed us a check for $100 and said, "This will be more than the offering. I wish it could be more." And we had a guarantee of $400 for each night, but so much for booking agents. And so we got one date in Phoenix, about 1,200 people at that show, and we got $400. We were pretty excited about it. But, you know, we slept on floors and sleeping bags.
Yep.
We did stuff that people would. Today, it's instant grits. You know, I'm going on television, I'm singing on AGT, and I'm the star now. And I'm thinking, you know, you need to put 40 years behind you and then see what happens.
That's right.
Because 50 years later, if you're still going, baby, I'll come and I'll write you a check.
There you go. I want to tell our listening audience some numbers here real quick. Petra sold nearly 10 million copies while being nominated for 13 Grammy Awards, winning 4, winning 10 Dove Awards. But I guess your biggest hit, The Coloring Song, reached the top position on 3 Christian radio charts simultaneously. And at its peak, the band's tours rivaled Amy Grant in popularity among Christian audiences. Does that sound about right?
Well, yeah, we in 85, we were up there like on a we're in the top 25 of all tours, along with Huey Lewis and the News and the rest of them.
Incredible.
I mean, performance was a friend of ours. They loved we had an average 7,500 people a night. That's the average, including doing Bismarck and Sioux Falls and, you know. But, yeah, we had, and we saw over 10,000 commitments in 1985 in the concerts. They came down by the hundreds, and we had counseling room. We had people that could give them Bibles, did follow up on them for 30 days. And I mean, every once in a while I have a man come up to me and say, you know, I'm a pastor today because you led me to the Lord in 1982 in Saginaw, Michigan at Saginaw Theater. I have 800 people in my church. I said, really? He said, yeah, thank you. I said, thank God. You know, we're just a conduit. We don't save anybody. We just testify the truth.
You
and
know,
the truth will make you free.
Because of you guys, we now have bands in churches, which I love. I mean,
oh yeah, they didn't allow drums in a lot of those churches.
Yeah, I love that. You know, now we got, you know, a full band, a stage, a little bit of lighting. You know, it's awesome.
It is really awesome. I mean,
yeah.
The diversity. It's just, I think it's fantastic. And, you know, I don't personally can't listen to certain styles for any length of time.
Right.
Like, just because they're not my cup of tea. But there are many, many people that do. So I say, as Jesus did when the disciples came to him and said, hey, these guys are doing this stuff and they're not with us. He said, leave them alone. What? Leave them alone. That's what he said. You know, they thought, well, you got to be a part of us. No, you don't. You just need to be a part of the body of Christ.
Right.
Many faceted members, you know. And so I am a body of Christ guy. I don't think that there should be walls. I do not. And I believe everyone has their place. They need to find their place in the body and fulfill the call of God on their life, and they're going to have to dig in to find that out. They can't.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just motor along. You've got to spend time in the Word. You really have to press in. You need to spend time in prayer and meditation before the Lord, or you won't hear His voice. But if you do, I guarantee you, He will talk to you, and you'll be glad.
What do you say to the people in Syria from a Christian point of view? The people that are
I weep over that whole deal because I know that it's political.
Yeah.
And I believe that there are changes that are taking place in the world, in our government. You know, I have a belief that God is still in control of this thing, and I don't like the fact of the pain and suffering that goes on that is not merited, but yet, you know, I've had my butt kicked a couple times that I didn't deserve either, you know, and last January, my wife died on me in January 14th at Sunday night. She's sitting here, and all of a sudden, she has a massive heart attack, and she died 3 times in ER, and they got her back each time and got stents in there, and she's alive, and it's like,
wow.
What? So I don't get it. She said, you know, that is the worst thing I've ever felt in my life. You know, and I said, I understand. But,
yeah.
And I don't want to be callous about it, but I just don't, I don't have that answer. I don't have the answer of what to do other than we can pray that God's will be done on earth
right,
as it is
right.
in heaven. And I do know that God, that Jesus is revealing himself to people personally in miraculous ways mm-hmm. in the Middle East. And I have friends that attest to that, people that are there, mm-hmm. people that are, you know, former congressmen, people that are that know stuff that I don't
yeah.
even want to know. Tell me what to pray for, I'll pray for it. Or, you know, the Lord will speak to his people. And he, if you're one of his kids and your ear is tuned and it wants to be tuned, I'll say just wants to be tuned, you'll hear him.
Mm-hmm.
About 3 weeks ago, the Lord woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. In the middle, it was 106 degrees that day in Dallas. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning. It was still 97 or something like that. And I wake up, and there's something wrong. I don't know what it is, but there's, mm-hmm. I know that there's something wrong.
Right.
So I go to the bathroom. I'm thinking, well, I'll just go to the bathroom. And I go there, and I'm hearing outside of the window, and I said, oh, my God, I know that sound. The compressor on my air conditioning had frozen up. So I go out. I come back in, shut everything off, and it just happened. If I had not been awakened, it would have burned up the whole thing, and it would have cost me $5,000 to replace it.
Right.
But as a result, I turned it off. You know, it was about 80-some degrees. We had to turn the fan on, and I called a friend, and he came out. He said, I'll be there before noon. He came out. He had the capacitor in his hand.
Really?
He just came from the truck, walked there, unscrewed the thing, plugged this thing, bang, it's up and running. I said, what did you just do? And he said, well, Lord told me it was a capacitor, so I brought the one with me. It happened to be the right one. And in 10 minutes, it cost me $150 instead of $5,000. Now, that kind of stuff, you don't hear about a lot, but
the Lord
does that because he wants to show off
yeah.
to his kids.
Yeah.
So if you let him be dad and you be the kid, you'll find some good stuff going on there. But,
that
you know,
is
true. We find this to be an adventure, Ray. It's mm-hmm. This is an adventure to us. And my wife travels with me everywhere I go. I don't go anywhere without her when I'm on the road traveling at all. So, and she works with the band. She takes care of all the merch for us free of charge because she loves what she does. And we don't get paid anything except for what comes in.
Yeah.
And I talked to a booking agent just 2 days ago, a big booking agent that handles like some of the top Christian acts in the U.S. And I need some help, but it's like, I want to see what the Lord might do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds funny. And I don't mind fielding calls, and I do get calls, and I do field them. And I don't mind doing some of the work, but it'd be nice to have William Morris on board again. But
mm-hmm.
I doubt if that'll happen. But we'll see. You know what? God knows. He's connecting people is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he does connect people.
You are
right about that. Yeah.
He is. And if we'll let him do it and not think that we've got all the answers
yep.
and take a little time to wait and pray,
yep.
then you'll
yep.
end up with a Kirk Henderson on guitar instead of,
yeah.
you know, maybe a young kid that doesn't have the experience. And
right.
Kirk, not only a good guitar player, he's a man of God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is just, he's so laid back, so easy to work with. And he just, you know, he loves the Lord. So there are, I'm telling you, I don't mean this wrong, but there are no stinky butts in this band.
Mm-hmm.
None. Everybody just gets along extremely well, which is, I just thank God for that. That's fantastic.
Well, I really hope the album does really well, Back to the Rock 2, because it's one of the best out there. And I hope people start, I hope you got help promoting the heck out of it. And I'm doing my best. I'm going to be putting this on like 5 different music sites, YouTube, iTunes. This interview will be it'll go everywhere. So I'll do my part.
If I didn't say anything wrong.
No, of course not.
But, oh, guys, you can always edit anything you want, by the way. Yes, you can. And I do appreciate everything you've done over the years, bro. I do.
Thank you.
It's just good to have people that want to get the word out. It's real good. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Here's a question for you that I ask everybody. It's very interesting. what kind of answers I get back. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate musically with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Who? Wow. You know, Andre Crouch was a good friend of mine, and I never got to really do much with him. And because I'm black on the inside. People don't know that, but I really am. I'm black on the inside.
That's a good thing.
That's a real good question. I would say that there are probably too many. There are too many people.
Yeah.
That would. I would love to do what I call a taste test. You know, I'd like to do with a dozen different people and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really enjoyed the 7 months I worked with Phil Kagi. He was a blast.
Yeah.
He would just start calling out chord changes. You know, we would go places. It was a fun time. And we had five lead singers in that. We had five singers, really good singers.
Really?
So it was like, yeah, yeah. And it was that way in pieces of eight, too. Joe English, of course, he was a really good high voice. Mm-hmm. And then Spencer Campbell, who is went on to become, well, a director of music at the University of New Mexico and played with, I don't know how many years he played with Sheryl Crow as a bass player. Great singer. Kirk's a great singer. Mike Demas, who was actually Pharrell and Phil's guitar player, was my keyboard player. Good singer. I had five lead singers in that band. And when we went out and played, the other bands would just line up on the sides of the stage because they wanted to hear if we were really doing it. We were. It's good to know you can still do it, bro.
Yeah. You know who I'd like to see you collaborate with? Carrie Livgren.
Well, that's an interesting story because Carrie contacted me not too long ago, and he wanted me to sing. He wanted me to be Joseph Arimathea on his rock opera that he's doing.
Oh, wow.
And then some physical problems happened with his wife, and he said, dude, I got to get through this first.
Right.
His wife is dealing with some stuff that, you know, just to get older, stuff takes place. So
yep.
I'm waiting, but, yeah, I have an invitation to work with him. He actually asked me to be the lead singer for Kansas. Back in it might have been maybe 91.
Mm-hmm.
He was walking in Nashville. No, Carrie, a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group, a girls' group maybe, that was doing Carry On, and they were at Michael W. Smith's theater in Nashville or club. And Carrie was there as a guest appearance, and I came down to visit. We're walking. He said, "Well, let's go for a walk." So he said, "Listen," he said, I've been asked to put Kansas back together, and I want to know if you'd be willing to do the lead singing. I said, sure. So he goes back, and Erzing Azoff says, oh, no, Carrie, I got to have all the original members, or I won't do this. And Carrie says, well, I'm not working with Walsh, so I'm out. So
yeah.
That's just one of those deals.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those deals, but... yeah, that'll be another thing. I have a rock opera called Ezekiel that you mentioned earlier. We did five performances of that. It was like it's like a Jesus Christ Superstar. It's got all the elements, and the Christian industry didn't know what to do with it, so nothing happened with it. But the producer and the writer George Atwell, I'm still in contact with George. And I said, George, I still want to do this someday, and we'll beef it up a little. He said, well, that'd be fantastic. He said, I have two more, too, that nobody's heard. I said, okay. So, you know, who knows what we can do?
Yeah, I think we're due for another Christian rock opera. That would be awesome.
Well,
we're about ready for it.
A guy named, you ever heard of Alan Schwab? He owned the Broadway musical Annie.
Yes.
He flew down from New York three days in a row to hear this. To see this show, this Ezekiel performance. And he wanted to put it on Broadway. And he said, now this is the next superstar. And so the lawyers get together, and then nothing happens.
Because
they can't come to an agreement. It's kind of like of all the money that comes in from all of the sources for the musicians, only 12% of that $54 billion a year.
Yep.
Goes to the artist.
Yeah.
That's it. The rest of it, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe we could get that changed a little bit, because without the artist, you know, they don't really make anything, do they?
Yeah, it's always kind of been like that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe there's some good changes ahead. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yep.
I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice to people.
Hey, that's Jesus' intention.
That's exactly right.
I put
a big typed up banner over my mirror years ago. It says, "Be nice."
There's too many nasty people out there. Someone's got to be nice.
There's no reason to be ugly. Come on.
No, there is no reason. You know.
I mean, unless you don't know the Lord, then I understand why you could be a stinky butt. But no, there's no reason. I mean, we're blessed. Brother, we are blessed, and if you just take a little time and count the blessings, and your worst fears, almost never happen to you. You know,
I think you're
the ones the enemy tries to beat you up with at night when you're laying in bed trying to go to sleep, and you think of all the stuff that could happen. Stop, just stop. Stop it.
That's true.
So, I was as a closing thing. Somebody asked me for. Oh, there's my daughter, my oldest daughter, who is an actress and she's a teacher. She has an acting school, actually. Mm-hmm. And she gets these young kids, you know, these deals with Russell Crowe and with whatever. She's very good at what she does.
Huh.
And she's handling the media for us. She put a website together for us. She's in her spare time, quote. I said, what spare time? And, but anyway, she, I forgot what I was going to tell you. It doesn't matter. People are helping.
Real quick, how many grandchildren do you have?
14.
Are you kidding me?
No, 14 grandkids.
Wow, that is incredible.
Don't tell anybody. I could be a great grandfather very easily.
That is incredible. I've got four, and I'm happy.
Well, you know, they live all over. I mean, they're all over the place. But we love them. You know,
too.
And my biggest prayer is that they'll get it. You know, there's a place where, you know, because of the society and the whole digital age and the web and everything, there's so many distractions that take you away from what's the heart of the matter.
And what's really important.
On the back of the T-shirts that we take on the road, it has a CPR logo, and on the back it says, "The heart of the matter is a matter of the heart."
Nice.
And my wife's cardiologist said, I will be gladly wear that T-shirt.
Sure.
He said, because I understand. And he understands. He came in the next morning in ICU, and I'm sitting in there, you know, after a long night. And he looked at my wife, and he said, "You know, you died on me last night." He said, "You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I know that prayer changes a lot of things, and I know that only God could do this. You should have died. You really shouldn't have made it." And I thought, well, you know, when your number's up, your number's up. But if it's not, And I mean, I got her to the hospital. She was at the hospital within 9 minutes, and the doctor was across the street. And he said, if you'd have been here 10 minutes later, this would have been a whole different outcome. But she's doing great. And she's a nice gal.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of symptoms did she have before she had the heart attack? Did she have any symptoms?
Oh, just being tired, just pooped, like just no energy. And she had 100% blockage in the main artery. They call it the widowmaker. And it just, you know, it's like, and here's the fun part. A month before, she had been to her former cardiologist and went through the whole test, stress test, the whole, you know, thing, and looked at the EKGs and this and that. She said, "You know, they look pretty good. Things look pretty good." 1 month later, bam. So when this new doctor came in, he said, "I want you to know I am your new cardiologist." In other words, this is not going to happen again. And he loves the Lord. That's a good part of it.
Right.
Pam was telling me that she said, I remember waking up on the table, and she said, I did see the most incredible, brightest light I have ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, I woke up on the table, I looked up, and there was this little nurse looking down at me, and she said to the nurse, she said, do you love Jesus? And the nurse said, yes, I do, and everyone else in this cath lab loves Jesus, and we just prayed for you, and you're in God's hands. Mm-hmm. She said, okay. So, I mean, and then he put the stents in, and she's getting the oxygen. Mm-hmm. Oxygen is a good thing to get to your, you know, into your blood, so... Yeah. And she's doing very well, and she's walking every day. She had 12 weeks of rehab, cardio rehab, which I don't think I could do 45 minutes of cardio rehab 3 days a week. And I'm a runner. I still play golf, though. I still go out and hit the ball.
Hey, golf is okay.
It's good.
It's good exercise.
I love to play golf.
It's
maddening.
did you play, did you play with... Well, Perry Como was probably, were you too young at the time to play golf? Or?
I played with Pat. I played with Pat.
With Pat.
I have a standing invitation to play with him anytime
right.
I'm out in California. But there are other people that I've met over the years that are, you know, they are professionals that play on the tour.
Yeah.
And I've gotten my swing tweaked. I play pretty good. I'm probably a 6, maybe a 6 handicap.
That's excellent.
And not too bad. I had a really good round last year. I was playing at the Hank Haney course. They have an academy up the road. It's a hard course, and it was one of those days. And Pam likes to go with me sometimes. If it's her day off, she'll come ride the cart. And I shot a 63. I was 9 under par.
Wow.
I was just totally out of my mind.
That's crazy.
It didn't matter where I was. The ball was going in the hole. Tipping in from off the green, 30-foot putt.
That's
and when my playing partner Jerry just looked at me and said, "You know, I got it." Something I said, "I'm keeping this scorecard." That's the lowest round I've ever
had. Have it bronzed.
Have it bronzed.
Yeah,
it was pretty. It was pretty special. But that's
you know
not
who
normal. Normal.
You know who you need to play with is Alice Cooper.
Well, I was thinking of Eddie Van Halen personally.
Okay, is he better than Alice?
And you know what? I've met him before. Back in the E-band days, and I was, my hometown was Peoria. He was playing this rock club in Peoria, and a promoter was working with us on something else. And this was, so we all go to this show, and it's, you know, the wild, I don't know, the old days when he would sit in the electric chair and the whole deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go backstage afterwards, and we're talking to him, and I'm thinking, he's talking to me like a regular guy. It's like, what do you mean? Your dad's a pastor? Yeah, my dad's a pastor. He just we're talking away, thinking, oh, my gosh. And I thought, you know what? Raise up a child in the way he should go, and when he gets old, he will not depart from it. So what happens is that you may go, you know, people may end up in la-la land for a while, which people do,
right.
And you may have a bad stretch. But the truth is that seed inside of you that's been planted there, that the Holy Spirit, it's not going to die. You can't kill that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it will eventually burst forth again.
Yep.
At the appropriate, at the appointed time, I'll say. And when it does, then your life will change again.
Sure.
I mean, I had a couple rough years myself where I felt like I was just in a pit. But I always knew that God loved me, and I always knew I'd come out of it, but I just didn't know when.
I think
and
we all have.
then when I did, it was like I was born again.
Yep.
And but that was that's another story. That'll be in the book.
Good.
It was a pretty wild ride, but it's good to be back, as they say.
Well, we're glad you're back. And
I've been back for 24 years. So
yeah.
I'm good. I'm back, you know.
Well, make sure you play some golf when you come to Florida, you know.
That's a thought. There are people that have asked me to play. I don't know if I'll bring my clubs or not, but maybe when in November, just, you know, maybe text me your cell number and make sure I've got your email address.
Okay.
Do you play?
Yeah, I play. I shoot in the 90s. I mean, I'm not.
That's fine.
You know.
I shoot in the 90s sometimes on the front nine. No,
but I love to play. It's a great game.
It's a good game.
Yeah,
we can get together. There's Dan's old partner Brian wants to play too.
Okay, so we got a foursome together.
We can get a foursome. We can kick it around. I maybe get Dick Mass. He's still down there. Dick, you know, is a senior tour guy. He still plays really good. He's in Winter Garden. So I mean, there are people I call. I like to play. You know, the reason I like to call them is because they can get you on anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing with a professional? Yes. Well, that'll be $10. Okay.
We got some really fancy courses around. I live right between Bradenton and Sarasota.
And oh, my gosh.
It's called Lakewood Ranch, and they've got some really, you know, really exclusive courses in this area. That are really,
well,
really
you
nice.
Know, that's very interesting. I'm going to be calling you because we have some stuff working in Clearwater that is not too far away.
Nope.
And
very close.
I can always rent a set of clubs. I'll bring my shoes and gloves and ball. Just rent some clubs, too. You know, or if you got an extra set, and you can just bring those along.
Just don't embarrass me too much.
No. I usually make, you know, two or three birdies around, and then depending on the bogeys, you know, depends on the course.
I'll get lucky once in a while.
I do, too. I just enjoy the game because it is a great challenge.
It is. So,
well, we'll do that. We will play some golf.
Sounds good. I guess I can send my email information to Dan the man.
Yep.
Okay.
Or you can send it to me. My email address is greg@gregxvols.com.
That's easy.
Yep. greg@gregxvols.com.
I'll make sure I send you an email with all the information.
Yeah, get it to me. Yeah, and I'll keep in contact with you.
All right, I appreciate
that,
Greg.
We'll definitely make sure that you've got tickets for the concert.
Definitely. That'll be a lot of fun. That's a great
show. It'll be fun. It'll be great.
Greg, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it for all the awesome music you've given us and continue to bring. And I'll see you up there at the show, brother.
Okay, will do. Blessings. Okay. Good luck to you.
Good luck to you, too.
Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Be sure to catch Classic Petro with David and the Giants Friday, September 21st, 7 o'clock at Victory Church in Lakeland, Florida. Order God Only Knows by Greg Volz, his solo album, and Back to the Rock 2, 5 Stars All the Way by the CPR, CPR band at Amazon.com. Incredible album. For more information about Greg Volz, visit www.gregvolz.com or www.facebook.com/GregXVolz and www.cprband.rocks. Very special thanks to Dan the Man of White Thorn Events for arranging this interview with Greg Volz, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of the Ray Shasho Show. And if you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me, the Ray Shasho Show at gmail.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of a Neglected American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.